Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Weed Wongs, the podcast that dives deep into the nerdy details, the minutiae, the ever-fun silliness that is cannabis regulatory policy. And we do it all to help our fellow policy wonks, policymakers, regulators, business members, advocates, and the canna curious stay more informed about the changing landscape of cannabis laws and regulations. Please remember to rate, subscribe, and review. I'm your host, Jordan Wellington, managing partner at VS Strategies. Special thanks to our corporate sponsor, the people who make sure this happens, Rootworks, as well as our amazing podcast producer, Josh, to make sure everything sounds absolutely perfect in your earbuds, headphones, and whatever other listening device you choose to use. We are incredibly excited for part two of this podcast. We've spent the first half talking to Brandon about the campaign and all the great progress that he was able to make in Ohio. And we talked about all that great kind of political end of things, but that's only half the story that we need to know if we want to be able to think about what's going on in Ohio and understand all of the different aspects of the landscape. The other part is the legal reality, the laws, the statutes, the rules, the regulations, all of the boots on the ground, technical details. And for that, we have probably the best person in the one of, if not the best people in the entire country that we could have on for this. We have someone who has been working in cannabis law for so long that he is even more of a dinosaur than I am. He is protozoic. He's such an OG. He has so much experience. It's unbelievable. He is one of the absolute founding fathers of this movement. And most critically for today, he is a legit born and bred Ohioan. And so he not only knows this in and out from a legal perspective, but he's got it in his blood. And so I am absolutely thrilled and it is my pleasure to welcome Brian Vicente to the show to talk a little bit about what's going on in Ohio.
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. It's wonderful to be on with you, my friend. And I think probably the biggest overlooked cannabis story of 2023 was Ohio legalization. I think it's an absolute landmark for this movement. So I'm glad to be talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the most interesting parts that Brandon highlighted really well was Trump's won Ohio by 8 percentage points in back-to-back elections. And we just had an absolute landslide on cannabis issues at the ballot too. And those two things are really a change in our perception of the politics of cannabis. And maybe that's a good way to kind of just give a little bit of your background and talk about for a second, because you have been working on this and advocating for cannabis policy reform long enough to know that this wasn't always the case, right? That this is actually a massive and monumental shift in how conservatives are looking at our issue. So maybe just talk a little bit and maybe weave a little bit of that in, like when you started out doing this work so long ago, and we'll get into the real details another time when we have a show just dedicated to your history. But, how does that make you feel, I guess, as somebody who's been working on this for so long that, I mean, that's monumental progress from a success perspective.
No, it's truly remarkable. I mean, this is my 20th year of, you know, full-time cannabis legal work. And, it was definitely viewed as sort of a fringe issue for many, many years, right? Whether it was either left-leaning Democrats or libertarians were the only people that showed up to the party. And now we have, you know, multiple fairly conservative states coming on board with legalization. So I think, and a lot of different age demographics too. It used to be just young people of color that supported us, but we've really kind of moved past. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about Ohio and you know, it being redder than red. I grew up in Cincinnati, which is, you know, there's parts of it that are Democratic, but by and large, it's a pretty Republican city. And my parents were essentially the only Democrats on our block in our suburb growing up. They put up a Dukakis for president sign. So this is the 80s, I guess. It was lit on fire in our front yard, Jordan. I swear to God, I was scarred. I came down like the next day and our Dukakis for president, Dukakis Benson, was lit on fire. So it's like, this is a state with some deep conservative roots. And the fact that, they embraced cannabis in an off year election, right? A 2023 odd year election truly speaks to the fact that this issue has really transcended party lines.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's just a testament to the hard work that you have put in over 20 years and many, 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 many other people to get us to this point, right? Where it's not just progressives and libertarians. It's not just Democrats that, you know, support for cannabis policy reform really crosses all age groups, political groups, and all kinds of things. I mean, I think it's just, and Ohio is a great example of it, right? In terms of a state that is a deep red state, a state that, you know, has had its dalliances with purpleness, but was never true blue by any means, right? And now to go not just win by a couple of points, I mean, a 14-point victory at the polls is a massive, massive landslide. And so I know we want to get into the technical details, but I think it'd be hard to kind of talk about the language of the initiative and the proposed regulations, which is what we're going to spend some time on, without just having a chance, you know, to maybe bask in our success a little bit. Especially for you as an Ohioan, like this is probably a huge emotional victory in addition to obviously an important political one.
It's a giant win. And, you know, Ohio, you know, I'm barred there as an attorney. We've represented medical clients there for years. And I, you know, a lot of my family's still there. It's a meaningful win, right? It's the 24th state. So we're getting very, very close to that tipping point, right? Where we'll get 25 states. We'll probably pick it up this year, I would hope. And I think that'll be a big, if nothing else, sort of symbolic change. And I think that'll actually really accelerate things when we hit that, you know, 25, 26 state tipping point. But it's also a state with 12 million people. You know, I mean, it's just a giant state, you know, the heart of the Midwest, we called it growing up. And it's viewed as, you know, as goes Ohio, so goes the country. So I think this is a giant, giant deal. You know, we were able to contribute to the campaign in little ways. You know, I'm on the board of the Marijuana Policy Project and they helped with funding, but our law firm wrote the economic analysis that the campaign used that shows the growth that we're going to see from medical to recreational. And it's absolutely jaw dropping. You know, it's between 400% and 600% growth in this market. So going from medical to adult use. So it's going to be this economic engine for a state that, you know, like many places, you know, needs those economic drivers.
Yeah. And I think, you know, from a business perspective and for folks who are interested in pursuing opportunities in Ohio, obviously they should reach out to the Vicente Law Firm and talk to you about all those things for sure. But it is, you know, each state moving from medical to adult use presents different market opportunities, both based upon the nature of their medical program and their own population, past month cannabis consumers, like all the different factors that go into it. And Ohio really does present a great opportunity on that front, right? It was a small, but not so small medical program that like, it's going to take forever to get it off the ground and there's going to be problems. Like it's big enough that it's ready to cook, but not so big that there isn't growth opportunity, right? When you have some of these states with really robust patient numbers and big medical markets, you don't get those growth projections. Like it's uniquely situated to be a really amazing business opportunity.
I really think that's true. I mean, so many more people are going to have legal access and these businesses are going to do great. And, you know, it's funny, we ran economic analysis with our mutual friend, Andrew Livingston here in house. And, you know, you look at Oklahoma, if they would have legalized, it would have increased, you know, from medical to rec would have gone like maybe 10% growth, you know, like it's just like they have a very robust medical program. Ohio has a decent medical program. It passed in 2016, you know, it has PTSD, it has chronic pain, but they capped out at somewhere around 500,000 patients. And there's, you know, a decent number of stores and grows, but not a ton. And so we're looking at over 1 million past month cannabis consumers in the state. And I can say that as having gone to high school, there's a ton of people smoking weed. Also generally surrounded by all prohibition states with the exception of Michigan, and also surrounded by two states that don't even have medical, as archaic as that is, right? With Indiana and Kentucky, although Kentucky, I guess, is implementing it now. So it's going to be this 400 to 600% growth. It's just going to be a giant boon. It's really an exciting opportunity.
And given those conservative realities that we talked about, you know, there are a lot of people who were cannabis consumers and would be again if the laws changed. You know, the last time one of the most recent times I went to go visit my in-laws, we were at one of my wife's friends' houses for a house party. And like, there was this whole conversation about how like, no, you can't smoke weed in the house. No, you can't smoke weed in my backyard. No, you can't walk down the street and smoke a joint. And I'm like, I've been living in legal Colorado for 10 years. You're having a party and inviting us all over. And there's like nowhere to smoke weed. Like, okay. But I think a lot of those people, it's not a moral moral thing. It's a legal thing. And they have concerns about their neighbors. They have concerns about their jobs. And one of the things that legal cannabis does allow is that people who have that anxiety that were past consumers that would like to consume, but are concerned about risk to their career, that stigma, those risks kind of tend to die down over time. And those people can make a choice whether they want to be alcohol or cannabis consumers or both, as long as they do it responsibly. And I think that that also will help really well with, you know, some of those numbers, that those people aren't getting caught up in the past month marijuana consumer statistics now. And I think you'll see some people make the safer choice, as we like to say, and over time.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, it's still medical. You know, the intel I'm hearing is we still have another 2 years maybe to legalization there. But it does speak, you have these Midwestern states where, like, by and large, there's a lot of, you know, overdose deaths from opiates, and there's obesity and just other things that, you know, alcohol could really contributes to in a lot of ways. So I think, you know, you spoke about the substitution effect, very real, you know, and I think it'll be a healthier state at the end of the day when more people start consuming cannabis instead of alcohol, or less opiates, a little cannabis to deal with pain. So, you know, I think Ohio should have a bright future.
Yeah. And I mean, look at Pete, right? The governor of Pennsylvania came out and was like, I'm sick and tired of losing in Ohio, right? Like, you want to talk about how important Ohio moving forward is it's the domino effect that we were talking about, right? It's not just Ohio. It's that, you know, within what, like 90 days of the election, the governor, or maybe a little bit more, the governor of Pennsylvania is coming out and saying, we need to get this done. I'm sick and tired of losing to Ohio. Our people are just going to go there. And I think that the governor's budget address and the way he structured his budget improves our chances of success in Pennsylvania. And Ohio is directly correlated to that. So, you know, I agree. Ohio was not, it wasn't the thing that's on everybody's radar last year. And there's a lot of scary stuff going on, so no judgment on what's on folks' radars these days in cannabis. But it is a really, really big deal from a market perspective, and its impact politically, both nationally as we add more states, but also regionally as states kind of feel like, well, we can't, you know, Pennsylvania is definitely feeling like, are we really going to keep prohibition if most of our neighbors are now cool? Because West Virginia is starting to become more politically viable. They already got New Jersey. You know, I mean, I think they're going to be surrounded on all sides before you know it. And, you know, just further testament to success. So within Ohio, forgetting about Pennsylvania, we don't want to talk about them anyway. So just starting with, obviously, we talked with Brandon, it's a statutory initiative. So in theory, the legislature could make changes. Right now, we'll see if that happens. It looked like there was like a lot of momentum for something to happen, and that momentum is starting to peter out. So maybe nothing happens, but assuming nothing happens, at least as it was written, can you give us kind of like the lay of the land of what was in the initiative in Ohio?
I can, yeah. And, you know, it has been, interesting, right, in that it's a legislative or a statutory measure, so we can have some tweaking, right? So all of this, I'll lay out what's in the law and actually where I think it's going. And we have, you know, lobbyists and others we correspond with in Ohio all the time. But it was pretty interesting after it passed, you know, the governor, DeWine, who was you know, vocally against it, quickly said, oh, it passed. We better figure out a way to get this done. And now it's sort of a battle of the House and the Senate being particularly bad in Ohio on cannabis, trying to figure out a couple key issues, you know, and there's been a lot of noise. There's also a primary season election coming up in March. So, there's a lot of posturing right now in Ohio. But ultimately, you know, the legislature and the House and Senate will get back together in April. And that's when we'll see if there are significant shifts in the law as the voters passed. I mean, the issues they may examine and the issues they've really been beating up have been, you know, what should be THC caps in flower and concentrate. The statutory initiative said 35% flower, 90% concentrate. That could be watered down in certain ways. The other issue they've been looking at is tax, right? You know, initiative said approximately 18%, could be a little less. And, you know, there's been proposals from 10 to 20%. And that's a pretty big deal, because you look at Michigan actually has a fairly low tax on cannabis. So if I'm an Ohio consumer and I can save 15%, I might drive to Michigan. So I think that's a pretty relevant thing to discuss. And the other kind of issue, which I think is really relevant for listeners, is like, well, when do these stores open, you know, and when will new licenses be available? So those are the ones that may be tweaked. But the skeleton of this law, Jordan, is actually, you know, it's, I do think we should Pat, Coloradans have been on the back because, you know, the structure we created here with the law that I drafted with our friends and the law that you helped implement and make real, Jordan, you know, has remained the skeleton and structure in new states, right? So we have Ohio, you know, removing criminal penalties. That's a pretty big deal. I've had a number of friends and clients get busted for cannabis and paraphernalia over the years. I think paraphernalia is still probably illegal, so there's still an issue to be addressed there in Ohio. But, you know, that's significant. And then you essentially have, you know, and within that is home grow. So they do allow home grow. It's 12 plants, you know, essentially per resident, 6 per individual, 21 and over. So that's a big deal. And that's one of the guys who helps write these things. You're always like, should we include home grow or not? It doesn't poll well, but it seems to always pass, right? So that's pretty big for consumers. And then you have the regulatory structure itself. And what they did, I think, is actually quite smart. They essentially consolidated medical and recreational cannabis under one umbrella in the Department of Commerce called the Division of Cannabis Control. So they did, but they did follow the trend, which I like to think Colorado began, which was basically allowing medical operators a head start, if you will, right? And I, you know, as someone that, you know, wrote the first legalization law, that I particularly put that provision in the first law in Colorado, because I just think if you've had your neck out there for years, back in the day, I was facing, you know, serious criminal prosecution, but you've taken time to really help patients for years, you deserve a head start. You know, it's not forever, but it's a head start. And this is a pretty good timeline we have here. It basically allows pre-existing medical operators to flip to dual use, you know, at very little cost. And then you, in Ohio, you have these kind of two levels of growers, right? You have kind of big growers who are level one. They'll actually get three stores sort of handed to them, which they can, you know, there's a process to get those. And they can also expand their grow up to 100,000 square feet, which is pretty significant. Then you have level two medical growers. Again, all these licenses were given out years ago. We represented some of those guys. And they'll get one store and be able to expand their grow as well. So, you know, it's a pretty nice sort of head start for those folks, you know. And they sort of cap it all at having, you know, like, you'll ultimately be able to have 10 total licenses, 8 stores, 1 grow, 1 processor. So it's, you know, I think these folks are going to do well. The important thing is the timeline for them is pretty aggressive, right? Because we actually saw the governor saying, well, I don't understand. And weed's legal. You can grow it, but there's nowhere to buy it. You know, it's like he's making the arguments that we've been making for years. Let's get these stores open. So then the question is that going to happen in June or is it going to happen in September? Right, barring any sort of crazy legislative activity, and the initiative says September, and you know I wouldn't be surprised if they're licensed September 1st, and apps come out in June. That's kind of the way it's been discussed, and my guess is that is fact what happens.
And then additional licenses will be made available. I mean, I think that's really important, right? Like we keep talking about it as a head start, but as someone who dealt with kind of the implementation in Colorado, what are the main reasons, you know, you call it a head start, you call it whatever you want. What are the main policy justifications? And the reason that regulators wanted that is it gives you a chance to get your feet wet, right? Like if you roll everything out at once, you're dealing with licensing the people that you know and the people you don't know. And it's nice to kind of have like a little bit of like a weather balloon. Like we already know these people, we've already vetted them. We're going to get a training wheels process, you know, from riding a bike, like, hey, we're going to figure out how to do this. We're going to get our feet wet. We're going to kind of make some mistakes along the way with folks we know that are a bit maybe like lower stakes in terms of like, does this person qualify or not? Like they've kind of been vetted. They've been through the ringer once. And I've always felt like that in certain circumstances with regulatory agencies, and especially with this idea of combining and kind of reducing the number of agencies, you want to give them a chance to kind of get their feet wet. You don't want to make some kind of oligopoly, as you noted. But at the same time, you know, if you try to roll everything out at once, we've also seen that, you know, there's only two versions of that, right? There's delay everybody forever, and that's a disaster. Or there's launch everybody at once, and that can be a real administrative challenge for folks. So, and not just for the regulators, right? Like you guys do a lot of licensing all over the country. The staging helps like the people who do this and support businesses and get things done. So I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons. I think the one you mentioned about how these are the people who stuck their necks out and have been serving medical in a much scarier environment, I think has validity. But I think there's also kind of just purely administrative reasons as well why this can help with the functioning of a regulatory agency and the rollout of a market.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And there, yeah, to your point, there will be an additional 90 licenses coming in. And, you know, as I was kind of reading this law this morning and just sort of buffing up on it, Jordan, I had a bit of a reminiscent moment where when we were drafting Amendment 64, which of course is the legalization bill in Colorado, I was talking to our colleague and our mutual friend, Steve Fox. And I said, well, I don't understand. You know, we have dispensaries, we have medical dispensaries, you know, what are we going to call adult use dispensaries? And he's like, we're going to call them stores, Brian. And it just always cracked me up. I was like, well, that makes total sense. But it was like, there was no model, right? It was like hilarious. Yeah. So anyway, Ohio will be having 50 new stores, adult use stores, and, you know, 40 new grows, right? Those grows will be tapped at 5,000 square feet. So, you know, considerably smaller than the 100,000 and the level two guys, but significant nonetheless. And then both these new license types will be given sort of in a preferential manner that's yet to be determined by this new sort of agency set up, the Social Equity and Jobs Program. And there's a lot of, I mean, the remarkable thing here is that people are beginning to really care about this issue. You know, as someone that's worked for decades in cannabis policy and always cared about social justice and social equity, it never really made its way into laws because it didn't poll well. No one cared. Now it's almost impossible to pass a law without a social equity provision. It's just a remarkably excellent change in policy. But this law, you know, Initiative 2 has about three pages on social equity and what this means. None of it actually has any teeth, but it does set up a program. This program will, you know, provide some sort of certification to folks who are applying for these 90 licenses. It'll give them discounted fees, I think 50% off of, you know, licensing fees and application fees, all that fun stuff. The idea is there'll be some sort of mentorship or maybe even financial assistance programs within that. So it seems like in broad strokes, it's really pretty meaningful, but there have yet to be really any teeth here. So this is kind of where the sausage is going to be made in the next, you know, 4-6 months. The discussion is that late this year, we'll see sort of applications around these additional 90 licenses.
And, you know, I mean, having dealt with, you know, kind of social equity programs in many states, sometimes those broad brush strokes without the details in statute actually can help a lot, because it's a lot easier to change rules than statute. So, you know, as we go through this journey of trying to empower social equity applicants to be business owners, we learn and we get better at it every year. And if you got something locked in statute and you're like, man, it'd be a lot better if we could do it this way, those regulators are going to change it a lot quicker than you can get the legislature to do it. So there's a lot of value there. And I think, you know, just harkening back, I did a show with Andrew, the aforementioned great Andrew Livingston. And we were talking a lot about kind of some of the interesting arc of this, you know, in terms of the social equity issue. When you look back in Colorado, the history of it and how everything's changed. I mean, everything's turned on its head, right? When we implemented adult use in Colorado, the Democrats and the Republicans all wanted strict restrictions on people with criminal histories, prohibiting them from working in the industry, right? Like, could you imagine if Amendment 64, like what would have that done to the polling on Amendment 64 if you had, you know, prioritization of previous people convicted of cannabis offenses to get a license? What Amendment 64 did was shift the Overton window. So people can play the blame game on like some of the stuff that, you know, was done back then. But the whole reason we're able to have this conversation the way we are in Ohio is because of the work in Colorado and how that completely changed people's perceptions over many years of a lot of hard work. And then we're now able to write initiatives that, as you noted, are far more in line with your own personal preferences and beliefs than you were able to do in Amendment 64, because you guys were first and foremost needed to win, because you lose that election, it doesn't do anybody any good at all. So you got to make these kind of compromises with yourself. That's when I used to teach a law school class about ballot initiatives, that was the lesson, is that in legislative politics, you're trying to compromise with all of the stakeholders. In ballot initiatives, you compromise with yourself based on your perception of voters, which is a very different dynamic. And I think what you see play out when you look at the historical arc from Amendment 64 to Proposition 2 in Ohio, where all of a sudden you are able to kind of put these kinds of things that, I mean, you guys wrote Amendment 64. I've known you for a very, very long time. I could say without question, if Brian Vicente was just allowed to do whatever he wanted, there would have been a robust social equity program in Amendment 64. But you had to win to create the pathway for future social equity programs. And without that, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, right? At that point, cannabis had been functionally illegal for 80 years. You know, so you're trying to write a law that'll pass, and you're trying to get away with as much as you can. But the good thing is, a lot of the social equity stuff has just come to the forefront, man. And you know, I was actually working on a memo for this for Minnesota this morning. I mean, it's like, how do you thread that needle on making sure that those who were wronged by the drug war have a meaningful path forward, right? And it's not just a license without any support or, you know, it's and so forth. So it's great that we're having the discussion. It's great that it's an open question. And Ohio is about to get their hands dirty on this piece.
Yeah. And I think from having dealt with this, it's not easy. It's the work that must be done. It's the right thing to do. And, you know, typically the right thing to do isn't the easiest thing to do, right? Otherwise, everyone would be doing it. So really appreciate that and great kudos. And I guess the only other thing you mentioned that I didn't get to comment on is that's like the most wonderful and perfect Steve Fox statement I think I've heard a long time. Very, very good friend of both of ours. And, you know, that was his way, right? Where you'd like be thinking about something and you'd be real, what are we going to call these things? I'm like, he's just like, We're just going to call them stores, Brian. This is far more simple than you're kind of like, you're going through all the different possibilities and permutations. He's like, no. We don't need it. Like, we're not going to overcomplicate this. They're just stores where people go buy shit and it's not that scary. Yeah. We call them liquor stores, right? Like, so.
It's so funny, man. Yeah. He could cut to the core. That's the godfather right there for sure.
Yeah. Without question. So, all right. So we've got our statute and then we're in a really interesting phase, as we noted, and we'll probably circle back and have some follow-ups on what's going on in Ohio later in the year when more of these details are sorted out. But we feel like now is the time where we have to at least talk about it a little bit because we have the statute. The legislature may change things. They may not. They're very focused on a variety of issues. Also, there's a lot of conversations around hemp stuff, too. So, you know, I think there's still a mix there of what's going to happen, but we'll have to see if they decide to make significant changes to a landslide initiative in a presidential year. Like, maybe not. We'll see how it goes from an election perspective. But the regulators are moving forward, right? The regulators are moving forward. They have a job to do. Law in Ohio, the statute is good law. The law in Ohio says you guys have to start doing this. So kudos to them for not being like, well, we're going to do nothing until the legislature decides what they're going to do, because I've seen regulatory agencies pull that move too. So kudos to the regulators for rolling up their sleeves. And they did put out their first draft of regulations. Those regulations had their comment period end this past Friday. So sadly, we can't let folks know to jump in and comment. But I think importantly, there will be additional rounds of regulations coming out and additional comment periods. And we encourage everybody to get engaged, submit written comments, and try to help everyone collectively make these regs better. But in this first round, can you just give us a sense of what they did kind of cover in this first, you know, kind of slice of the pie that they chose to take a bite out of?
Yeah, so basically, the sort of new agency within Commerce took a stab at some proposed regs. So this is a proposal, and you know the focus is really on how are we going to get business licenses in the hands of these medical cannabis business owners, really. So that's what they're trying to address, and they did it in a thoughtful, maybe too thoughtful way. Like, and I'll kind of explain what they drafted because it's complicated. But the long and the short is, you know, if you will hold a medical marijuana license, business license currently, you will have access to getting adult use license, right? This is not like a merit-based system, where you win or lose. It is a lottery, which is a little confusing, and I'll explain. But, you know, you have the option, right, to apply to turn your current facility into a dual use or simply recreational, right? Dual use being medical and recreational. And they actually provided sort of a cherry, right, for folks that said, hey, I'm a medical store now, but I want to be both. I want to apply for a dual use store, which will allow me to serve patients and also, recreational users. Obviously, there'll be some, you know, they kind of drafted some rules related to that and hours and service lines and so forth, which seem fairly thoughtful. But the sort of bonus they've threw in there is, you know, if you decide to convert your facility into a dual use facility and honor patients, which you know, I tend to think is the right thing at this point, before everybody just goes recreational, which seems to be the trend. But in terms of, you know, let me just clarify, you know, medical is absolutely legitimate, but over time people shift away from cards and just go into recreational stores. Right. And
there's still patients
the same way. Yeah.
And
still
most people use cannabis for some palliative purpose or self-medication one way or another. They're making a decision not to put their name on a government list of people consuming cannabis, go through a bunch of rigmarole. And it's, I view it largely as an economic decision in a lot of cases, right? How much more expensive is adult use than medical? How much hassle do I have to get my medical card? Okay, I'm going to make the same rational economic actor decision that we make all day long in our lives. Is the juice worth the squeeze? And I think for a lot of patients, they just decide, I could just go buy like recreational cannabis, and all the administrative work to get a medical card isn't worth the cost savings that I'm going to get from it. And then or I guess some people have possession issues or they want stronger edibles. It's not just that, but it's a lot of it's rational
tax issues.
Yeah.
But Ohio, so I think it's a thoughtful approach. What they're saying is if you apply for dual use at your business, you will get two lottery balls instead of one. The adult use, if you just apply for adult use, you just get one lottery ball. And the lottery itself is fairly convoluted, what they've created. I would not be surprised if they change this. But basically, the whole thought here is these folks automatically get a license, but where will their facility be, you know, in these new stores, right? Are they going to be in downtown Cleveland, or are they going to be in the middle of nowhere in, you know, Akron or something, right? And so it's
My wife is from Akron, Canton.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. So then ultimately what happens from there is they, you know, you put all these lottery balls together for all those people that opt in, whether they get one or two balls, you then have a ranking, right? Everyone's on the list, right? You don't get bumped as long as you meet basic qualifications. And then that ranking list is sort of relevant for the second lottery, right? The second phase, which is you as a business owner choosing where you want to be, like a specific property area.
So it's not right? And so the game is not to see who can get a license. The game is to see who gets their first pick of where their business will be sited, right?
100%. And again, you know, that Cleveland store is just going to make more money than an Akron store, you know, like it's just different.
It's reality.
Right. So it's a big deal, honestly. Right. You know, where you're and if all your stores are in Cincinnati, you don't necessarily want to have a store 6 hours away in Cleveland. You know, you'd prefer to have them all in Cincinnati, right? That's where your grow is, right? So it's just sort of that's how they're approaching it. And it's interesting, Jordan, because, you know, I love cannabis policy because there's always something wacky and different. And this is wacky and different. We've done all sorts of lotteries. We submitted 100 applications in Maryland's lottery for new businesses last 2 weeks ago. We've never seen a lottery like this where everybody wins. It's just a question of where you're going to win, where your win is going to take place. You know,
it kind of feels like the NBA draft, right? Where everyone in the NBA draft lottery has a draft pick. It's really just a question of where you're picking that they're deciding and not who gets the lottery. And yeah, I think it's the first time we've kind of seen this like draft order style, like not winners and losers, but just the order of the draft. And it's kind of is like a draft, right? Like, the number one pick is going to pick the best business location, you know, for them within reason, but they're going to pick downtown Cleveland or, hey, I want to be circulated nearby grows. They're going to make the best business decision for them. And then number two is going to make the best business decision for them and so on down the line. So it is definitely a unique spin on things and sounds good to me, right? Like I love it. All the new creative ideas, good or bad, make life more interesting.
I totally agree. As a lawyer in this space, it just keeps your pencil sharp, man. It's just really interesting. And Ohio has some history, right? They did a pure merit-based system in 2016, 2017 for their business initial medical licenses. And then they gave some more store licenses via a lottery, which actually had a geographic component, right? Where there's regions, you have to apply in a certain region, but there's winners and losers. You know, if you 100 people apply at Cleveland, they only give away three licenses. Well, 97 lose. There's no losers here. This is all the medical guys, you know, will get a license. The question is where. And to add just another wacky component, you can't be within a mile of another store in Ohio, right? So if I'm the number one guy, you know, the number two guy might have a property, right, locked down that's within half a mile of my spot that I choose as the number one guy. So it's just sort of, it's fascinating the way they're setting this up. And then, you know, he would get his then second choice. I mean, it's a complicated system, but fairly thoughtful. I don't know. My guess is these proposed regs change a little bit and there'll be more comment periods, as you said. So
I mean, stay tuned. It sounds reasonably equitable, it's like wonky and kind of wacky, but like you do kind of, if you're going to have those kinds of distance restrictions, then you're going to have some kind of order in which people essentially it's like grandfathering, right? Like, this is my location. I'm grandfathered into this location. You can come in next, but those distance restrictions won't work if you say, well, everybody gets their first choice, right? Like, there has to be some kind of an order in which the regulatory agency is essentially going to award licenses. And this is as rational, I guess, as other approaches. I mean, I don't know what else they could do. I don't got any other. I don't have another idea for them off the top of my head at the moment. I don't know if you got.
Yeah, and it's also the trend, right? I mean, we've seen so much litigation in merit-based application states that, you know, removing a lot of that sort of subjectivity, right? Of, I think this narrative is better than this one, but a different expert says this is the best one, you know, and just having lotteries actually generally makes sense for having less lawsuits, which slow down the process. So I salute them because at the end of the day, I want these stores to open as much as anyone. That should happen quickly and fairly. So that's Ohio's take, the lottery.
Yeah. And I mean, I completely agree. Like, what is the number one important thing here? It's cannabis consumers in Ohio getting legal, regulated, safe, tested access to cannabis. And all litigation does is slow things down. It hurts. Who does it hurt? It hurts consumers. I mean, obviously it hurts the state because they're spending a whole bunch of money on litigation and things like that. But I think you and I are a little less concerned about state budgets as we are about, you know, the rights of cannabis consumers. And those people are kind of the ones who get the short end of the stick on all this stuff. I mean, look at what's going on in Alabama. Like, that's just going to delay access to Alabama medical cannabis patients. You know, right or wrong, whoever's right or wrong, I'm not even judging who's right or wrong. I mean, I have my own opinions. I'm just going to keep them to myself for now. We've got our own horses in those races. But I'll tell you this much right now, it ain't helping anybody who's a medical cannabis patient in Alabama. And by using a lottery in Ohio, it is going to avoid litigation, and that will benefit, or hopefully will avoid litigation. You know, you never know, but hopefully avoid litigation, and that will serve to significantly benefit the people of Ohio, which is who this law is for, by the way.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, like you, Jordan, I'm fortunate enough to be asked sometimes by governments or whoever, like, how should we write a legalization law? How should it look? And my number one comment every time is have a timeline for licensure that's like in stone, right? Because when you have a timeline and the state is forced to give out licenses, as we did in Colorado and other places, you force regulators and legislators to take this issue seriously and to fulfill, you know, our dream of cannabis legalization. Maybe the voters pass it, maybe the legislature pass it. The longer timeline there is, the more chance they have to fuck with it, man. And we've just seen this state after state, and that slows down patient access, that slows down recreational use. In Ohio, yeah, it's like, we got to get these licenses out because you have a very volatile state senate there that could, you know, really be like, well, the store, let's just prevent the stores from opening and let's make this, you know, our big issue for years. So I think they're going to abide by these timelines because the voters just passed it. But the more time that goes past, the more I get concerned about the program being viable at all.
Yeah. And that's our chance to prove we're right. You know, like, we are right. But when the stores open and nothing bad happens, then it's like case closed. It's like, what are you arguing about? Right. And until then, it's very easy to kind of like engage in the theoretical parade of horribles. But like, if the stores are open for a year and you're some politician screaming about all the terrible things that are going to happen, and then your constituent gets up and they're like, I had a store like down the block from me, and like, nobody cares. Cause like, that's the funny part about cannabis, is like all this sound and fury that goes on around legalization in Colorado, no one cares. The problem is getting our legislature to care. They almost care too little, so it's just struggle to fix problems. But we're just old news. They're like, what do you mean? It's legal, sorted out. We have like actual problems to fix, you know? Like, we're trying to make the world better. Like, we already dealt with your issue. We're like, yeah, we still got some stuff to clean up around here. But, you know, I think you're right. It opens the door to jack things up, but also prevents us from kind of demonstrating to skeptical potential community members that they don't really have anything to worry about. That people have been smoking weed in Ohio for a long time. And the only difference is like the people selling it are going to check ID. Like, and it's probably going to be safer than what you were getting from your black market dealer. That's about it.
It beats the stigmas because, you know, those those are just simply misconceptions. It also allows us to prove the case positively, right? Where suddenly, you know, when you have 400% growth in a market, think how many more jobs there's going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's going to be tons of jobs. Tax revenue is going to quadruple, if not more. Like it's really going to show that this is a product that needs to be regulated and can be well regulated. We've got, you know, 10 plus years of it now. Let's just get on board with that, Ohio.
Yeah, without question, regulation works. And I think it's probably enough said there. So, all right. Well, listen, I think the main takeaway here is the story is still being told. We have a great statute to start with. We have some really interesting and thoughtful regulations. You know, regulations are proposed regulations are meant to be tweaked and improved. That's what written comments are for. So I hope lots of folks got comments in on suggestions to how to make these things better for regulators in round one. Keep your eyes out for round two. And when the time comes and the dust settles a little bit more, you know, as our resident native Ohioan, unless my wife wants to jump on and start becoming an expert in cannabis policy, something after 11 years of doing this, she hasn't shown any interest yet. So I think your spot as the resident Ohio expert is safe, but, I'll let you guys duke it out if she changes her mind. And we'll have you back on to talk more about Ohio and, lots of other stuff later in the year. I think this is, I guess, just a heads up for our listeners. Anyone who's stuck with us this long, you must actually want to listen to the Weed Wonks. So we're in the mid 70s right now in episodes, which means before the end of the year, we're going to get to 100. And Brian doesn't know this yet because I haven't even asked him, but I'm sure he'll agree when I bug him. Episode number 100 is going to be pretty awesome. And Brian is going to be a pretty big part of it. So more details to come on that one, but we'll probably get to have Brian on a couple more times about Ohio. And then a real cool 100th anniversary episode for the folks that stick with us for another 25 shows or so.
Can't wait. Well, such a pleasure to spend time with you, Jordan. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Brian, thank you so much for carving time out of the day. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to more great progress in Ohio. And above all, thanks for all the amazing work that you've done over the last 20 years, because the world's a better place for it. So thank you very much. And I think a lot of people should share that sentiment. Cool. All right. With that, that's a show. Stay nerdy, everybody.